Ahoy, Vachon. How's the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
That was the voice of Brian Brown, creator of the Brown Briefly. Brian started the Briefly and brought his high standards of hosting an intelligent discussion of current events laced with humor and empathy. Brian's central concept was less is more, more or less, and he invariably offered much, much more. Let me introduce the Brieflies, guiding us from behind the board at the Voice of Vachon's Gene Bosch broadcast studio in bustling and bodacious downtown Vachon, and keeping us on course, even if it may be into the treetops, is former airline pilot, treetop landing aficionado, flight instructor, Vachon airport commissioner, West Texas devotee, and former military intelligence specialist.
Thank you.
Truman O'Brien. Good morning, Truman.
Good morning.
Get that all right?
Yeah, you got it all right. Just, I'll tell you, it's getting so long that I think we're going to have to extend the show a little, you know, to handle all this stuff.
You know, we're competing with Click and Clack.
Yeah, the Tappet Brothers. There you go.
Good to have you, Truman.
Thank you.
Sitting next to Truman is his wingmate, fellow treetop landing aficionado, arbitrator, mediator, two-time half-bright, full-bright scholar, or is that fully bright, half-bright scholar? I'm not sure which. You'll have to fill us in on that, Craig. High-end women's shoe salesperson, Pinkerton guardian of the first Boeing 747, former tort law professor, which I assume is something different from a pastry law professor, and Washington State Assistant Attorney General Craig Bellis. How are you this morning, Craig?
I'm good. What we forgot there was former, pyramid schemer.
Oh, I missed that one. Crazy.
Being one of the very first salespeople of Amway products.
Oh, no.
When they had two products.
Oh, my goodness.
The sudsing and the non-sudsing washing machine soap.
Liquid or soap? Oh, my God.
I always say I should have stuck with it. I'd be a multi-million.
Yeah, I was going to say, you blew it, man.
You and Jeff Bezos, right?
Yeah.
Unfortunately, we do not have Zooming in with us today from somewhere north of Nainamo. He's up in the further reaches of the Salish Sea aboard his yacht, Yopus, is our voice of indivisible Vachon and the Vachon Climate Action Group, Kevin Jones. So I hope Jones is enjoying much better weather than we are, but probably not. And I am Bruce Hallman. I'm zooming in from the bluffs above KVI Beach. And we are fortunate today to have joining us Brian Breno, who is the curator of the new 4th of July Hydros exhibit at the Vachon Heritage Museum. And we'll come back and talk about that more. And Elsa Kroonquist, executive director of the Vachon Heritage Museum. Brian, how are you today?
I'm great. Cold.
Yeah,
wet.
I understand the last weekend you were out at a booth at an art show. Freezing.
Garden. We actually last weekend we were Vachon garden tour and it was great. Except the minute we packed up our truck to leave, the minute we got home, it dumped, We got just soaked. But the whole weekend was great. It was a really great event.
Oh, good. And Elsa, how are you doing?
Oh, I'm great. And I've got my socks on again, so I'm warm. Yeah, disappointing because I put sandals on and said, no more shoes or socks now for the rest of the summer. Wrong. So anyway, I'm great. The museum is great. Happy to be here. Thank you very much for letting me be here.
Good. Well, thanks. Well, before we jump into talking about the museum and the new 4th of July hydroplane exhibit, let's take a moment and check in with everybody about the special things you've been experiencing this past week. Truman, what's been happening in your world?
Well, I'm not sure where I was last week at this time with the appliance saga of my house.
The ongoing
appliance saga. But I think I told you that my microwave had died, you know, finally. Well, guess what? Microwave is fine. It seems that the rodents have gotten into the wall somewhere in my house and have chewed through the wiring. And so, I noticed, I kind of hear this scritching around for a while. I'm not hearing it anymore. I think they got fried when they chewed through the wiring. And so now I'm waiting for the odor to come rising out of the walls. And I have to tear into it, of course, to rewire the place. I'm just lucky the house didn't burn down. So anyway, that's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Elsa, how about you? What have you been up to this past week?
Well, I actually, this last weekend, was in California for my uncle's memorial service, which was beautiful and wonderful. He was a wonderful man. He lived till the age of 90 and had a wonderful life and a beautiful family, and 60 years married to, everything's wonderful, but a wonderful woman and the love of his life. And so, you know, my experience on Sunday at 5 o'clock when I walked out of the airport was, rain. Thinking of yesterday, Sunday, but I also have some excitement in that, I have a 62 pound and a 42 pound, golden doodles at my house visiting for the summer, and they just arrived, and so they're jumping all over me, so we may hear them barking in the background. And the museum, you know, we can talk about the museum later, but the museum has been crazy busy active, and we've got a lot of things going on, so a lot of things for people to come and see at the museum.
Great. Good. Thanks. Greg, how about you? What's been rocking your world?
Well, I had a number of things. One of the things that I really enjoyed was we had to postpone the morning scramble that I normally do on the first Thursday, and it was this last Thursday, and we did a show that we wondered how it would be received. Turned out it was received just wonderfully. It was what I refer to as the last playlist or the dead last playlist. It was people's songs that they want played at their memorial or their rage or their whatever it is they want to have. And it was a wild cross-section of songs, ones that you'd think about and others that were, you know, extraordinarily funny or irreverent. So Mike Nichols, our ace harmonica player on the island, and I had fun with that. The other thing was I was involved with the garden tour a little bit myself. I was parking, and I won't name the particular garden I was parking at. But once again, it has reaffirmed my beliefs that nobody gets driving lessons anymore. because there was a requirement occasionally that somebody parallel park. And I would tell me if you could parallel park over there, you know, and the space was a spot you could have put an 18-wheeler in. Several people just had no luck whatsoever. They were like, why don't you just park in the middle of the road sort of thing. But it was it was well attended, and it was great. You know, even with the iffy weather reports, the weather turned out to be wonderful. But as Brian had indicated a second ago, right at the very end, it just poured. But so that was the perfect exclamation mark on the garden tour. So had a good weekend.
Oh, good, good. Brian, how about you?
Well, as Elsa mentioned, if anyone knows, my son is married to her daughter, and those same two dogs invaded our house. The kids are remodeling their house, so for the summer, we will be kind of sharing dog and kid duties. That's kind of rocked my world, made my house a lot louder and much more stuff happening. So I'm looking forward to summer with the kids And the dogs.
The dogs.
we're looking forward to it. It's just that you realize it's 104 pounds of dog that is invading your house.
Yes.
Wow. We're
My
not
cat
used to
it. Is not very happy.
Oh boy.
But you fit right in on Vashon, right?
Oh yeah.
Right.
How about you, Bruce?
Well, I've had an interesting week. Of course, this weekend was Father's Day, so we had all the kids and the grandkids out. And we took a walk early Sunday morning, no, Monday morning, along the bluff at near Gold Beach, you know, Maury Island Park. And, you know, you're right up there on the top of the bluffs looking down over the gravel pits. And it was kind of that, you know, misty, kind of not quite raining, but... not warm and sunny either. And this osprey came riding along the currents on top of the cliff and was literally about 10 to 20 feet away from us.
Wow.
It just sort of sat there for, you know, maybe 20, 30 seconds riding the air currents, you know, the up currents, and then took off and then sort of glided along. But magnificent birds. And to be that close and to see him, you know, or her, you know, just floating on those air currents. It was very spectacular.
Wow.
And then for Father's Day, I'm not a big tech geek guy. And so, you know, but they like to give me stuff because they don't know what to give an old guy like me. You know, what do I need? They gave me a cup. It's called Ember, and it's a teacup. Well, I drink tea more than coffee. It's a teacup that will keep your tea warm. So it's got a built-in heater system to it. And you can actually control it with your phone, which is sort of weird. But and I was thinking, what in the heck am I ever going to do with this? I love it. It's great. You know, you make a cup of tea, you know, and it's, you know, 140 degrees or 150 degrees, whatever, you know. I put a dash of milk into it. That brings it down to about 135 or 140 degrees. And then 20 minutes later, it's stone cold. Well, this stays warm forever. It's sort of amazing. So I've actually found that it's a gift I have appreciated. So
is it a battery operated or is it a plug-in?
It actually sits. Yeah, it is. It sits on a little charging pad.
Oh.
And then when you pick it up from the charging pad, you know, it'll run for like 20 hours or something like that.
Wow.
So, but it's really interesting. You can go into your phone and you can watch as you put milk into it. You can watch the temperature drop or whatever. But it set it like at 135. That's what it comes set at. And so it just keeps your tea at 135 degrees indefinitely, sort of a very interesting sort of technology that I would have never thought about, but I would have never bought it for myself, but that's why we have kids, right?
Yeah.
Buy all the things you'll never buy yourself.
Much better than a tie.
Yeah, that's right. Yes,
yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think of what we used to get my dad for Father's Day, and it's sort of like, oh my God.
Poor guy. Yeah.
Slippers and ties.
Yeah. Yeah.
He was very indulgent, thank goodness. Well, let's move on a bit. Today, like all days, is significant. This is the day, June 20th, in 1837, when Queen Victoria ascended to the throne. And, of course, gave us the moniker for a Victorian age. So, interesting. This was also the day in 1900 when the Boxer Rebellion in China began, and in 1975, Jaws was released on this date, unleashing the summer blockbuster phenomena that we still live with. So let's move on to small talk and talk about the 4th of July Hydro exhibit that's going to be at the Heritage Museum. And Brian, maybe you can tell us a little bit about what the 4th of July hydros are, what a hydroplane is, and how it got started and how you got involved with it.
Well, my family moved into the Quartermaster neighborhood in 1962 at the mouth of Jed Creek. And I remember as that first summer, I was warned and told that on the 4th of July at 6 o'clock in the morning, we were going to sleep out in the yard and the hydros would go for a run around the island. Well, I knew about the hydros because Roger Stanley and Warren Bibbins had small hydroplanes, and they would race them, play around, run around the harbor during the day. And so that first year, we slept out in the front yard, and the hydros woke us up, and we saw them go by, and we went back to bed, and then they came back about an hour later, and we saw them again. And that started the fascination in my connection with the whole event. It started with Roger Stanley and Warren Bibbins. Warren Bibbins had a heritage of boating in his family. His grandfather ran the steamboat Vashon between Burton, Quartermaster Harbor, and Tacoma. Well, he had been a partner with someone, and they split up, and they went in competition with each other. So the first mention of any sort of boat racing on Vashon was between these two steamers, Vashon and Burton. Well, they would race to get customers, and it was a big deal. And so there was also two families on the Quartermaster Drive, the Bibbins. Oh, well, there's three. The Bibbins, the Stanleys, and the Billingsleys. And they raced little tiny speedboats from the 20s, starting around 1926. So the Stanley family had this heritage. Bert Stanley, Roger Stanley's dad, made it into the Vashon newspaper in 1929 after he flipped his speedboat in Quartermaster Harbor after hitting a deadhead. So these two guys, Warren and Roger, also grew up in the 50s and were really fascinated by unlimited hydroplane racing in Seattle. And they were just two young guys that liked to wrench on things and go fast. They also like to make noise. They had a history of on New Year's Eve and 4th of July of lighting off dynamite and big fires in the harbor. Well, around 1955, Roger Stanley had his first little hydro. He decided to make a run around the island. He put extra gas in it and ran around the island. It was just a little 8-foot hydro with a 20 horsepower motor on it. And he thought that was really fun. Well, several years later, they got in trouble for making this noise on New Year's Eve. The harbor resident said, "You got to stop that." So their response was, the next New Year's Eve day morning, they went out in their hydros at 5 in the morning and woke everybody up. Well, they thought that was kind of fun. And then they decided, well, let's do that again. And so they did it again. And by the time we moved in the neighborhood in 1962, it had become a regular thing. They did it every year, which since they have done every year. So we're on almost over 60 years now of this little tradition happening.
So was it about 57 or so? Or?
Well, Roger did his first run in 1955 in just a little home-built hydro. Then they both bought professionally built hydros. Roger bought one from Ted Jones, who invented the three-point hydroplane, and in 1958. So their first run was, I believe, New Year's morning, 1959. Hmm. And Glenn McCormick apparently started them from his sailboat, I believe it was July 1960 was the first time they really did the first real run together around the island.
It seems to me like doing it in July is much more pleasant than doing it in January.
Well, yeah, the legend us kids in the neighborhood always got was that they did go around the island on the New Year's Eve morning. But I interviewed Roger in 2016 in depth, and he said, no. We would have frozen to death. But he did mention that the boats went much faster because of the cool air for some reason in the motors or something. I'm not sure.
Be the motors for sure. Wow.
Oh, interesting. So Elsa, Why is that? Why would the Heritage Museum be interested in doing an exhibit about these crazy 4th of July hydros?
Really? Why would we? Well, as you know, the mission of the museum is to tell all of Vashon's stories. And the hydros are a classic story of Vashon's individualism and action. A group of enthusiasts get together and start something that they've done every summer since 1955. It's a story that everyone is interested in, whether they love the hydros or aren't too fond of them. And this exhibit, you know, I feel, and the museum feels, helps us to take a look at both sides of the reaction to the hydro event and learn more about our community and our neighbors and possibly understand why these crazy people get out and do this crazy thing, you know, their point of view. And that's what we hope all of our exhibits will achieve, an opportunity to see all the points of view. We try all the points of view of history. Plus it's timely and it's July 4th and let's celebrate that Vashon tradition.
So, Brian, I'd like to mention that in general, I've come up with a theory. There's several different kinds of Islanders. There's the Islander who loves the hydros. There's the Islander that hates the hydro. And there's the Highlander that, kind of indifferent, whatever. And then there's the one that doesn't know anything about it. Well, the one that doesn't know anything about it has either become one, two, or three in the end. So we kind of put that into the exhibit, too, because, you know, a lot of people complain about it because of the noise. And it has been stopped by the authorities a few times because of noise and registration and different issues.
Does the Coast Guard get involved?
Coast Guard got involved in 1973. They came out with their cutter from Gig Harbor, and the King County Police came out, and they threatened to write tickets. And so the hydros did not run that year. But 10 days later, when the Coast Guard was gone, they did it. Well, King County, the island cops came down, off-island cop, but he was on duty on land, and wrote two tickets for noise. And since then, the general feeling from the King County Marine Unit and the Coast Guard is, it's the 4th of July. They got much more important things to do than come for a noise complaint. And it would take them over about an hour to respond, or they'd have to get, and so they just don't have the resources to do any enforcement. And the local island cops just basically turn a blind eye because of the tradition, and they don't want to get everybody mad at them. Mm-hmm. So it has an outlaw, in-your-face kind of thing. It's definitely not quote legal, but it's basically, the reason it's lasted that long is because it's just, you know, five or six guys that like to wrench on things and go fast. There's no association, there's no sponsorship, there's no, you know, there's nothing. It's just these guys go out there and have fun on 4th of July and boom, that's it.
What a great tradition
though. Yeah, great.
I remember the first time I heard the hydros when we moved here in 87, and we were on Robinwood Road up above, and I didn't know about the hydros for the very first time. And I'm sure this is an experience that many people who first moved to the island have, that first July. And I was asleep, and all of a sudden, I thought that there was a swarm of bees that were circling my head, and I started swatting at them like crazy. I thought, "What in the world?" And but then I've become a fan of the tradition. So now, when I hear it early in the morning, I don't panic. I was going to ask you, Brian, are you normally a morning person?
Cause I am not a morning person. Decidedly not a morning person.
Because you got to get up awful early.
I get up at 4:15 on 4th of July. That's about the earliest I get up all year. Unless I'm going skiing, maybe I'll get up a little later.
Okay.
No, I'm not a morning person.
I wondered.
Huh? So, Brian, can you tell us a little bit about all the the sort of festivities that go on at 4:30 in the morning at Jensen Point and tell people a little bit about that tradition.
It's pretty cool. You know, nowadays, maybe up to 200 people come down and watch them take off in the morning. And it's probably, they probably had, you know, hundreds or so for years. And so people like to come down and be part of the tradition by watching them take off. But it's really kind of, in a way, boring because they take off and they race around the harbor and then they're gone. And then everybody stands around for 45 minutes to an hour. And then all of a sudden, I hear them coming. And they'll bomb around the corner and zip, zip, zip by and boom, it's done.
But you know that... To me, that is just so Vashon. You know, I mean, that whole thing is just, that is just Vashon, the epitome of Vashon in my mind. It's just a crazy tradition that, well, it's like stupid bike night, you know, that kind of a thing. It's wonderful.
The other thing is, these little hydros, they're not meant to go 40-something miles in one run. They usually will go for a lap on a like half mile track, three laps on a half mile track, maybe 5 miles. These guys are trying to make these things go top speed over sometimes very bumpy water for that distance of time, and a lot of them break down. Yeah. Paul Stoddard, for instance, he attempted 20 times. He made it around twice and won once. The second time he made it around, he won, and then he quit. He said, "That's it, I did it." Roger Stanley says anyone that actually makes it around the island is a winner because you're this huge odds. Can you imagine kneeling in this little bouncy boat for up to an hour in one position?
No.
Yeah.
And do they have to put extra tanks on? What do they do?
Well, some of them do use two tanks and switch in the middle. They have a valve.
Yeah.
But now that most of them are using modern engines now, and one of the things about the modern engines is they don't have that loud exhaust, they're faster, and they use less fuel. So I think those guys that have the new motors can take less fuel with them.
That's a shame, though. You got to have that noise, and that's what makes it.
Yeah, you know. We hope that there's always at least one loud one. There's one guy that's racing. He's racing the past couple of years, and he's very light. And they were down there testing the other night, and he had, I think, 85 pounds of weight in the front of his boat because he's so light. If he went full blast without that weight, he would
just fly over.
Yeah.
Wow. So, Brian, what is your connection? Do you?
Well, I grew up around it, most of my friends in the neighborhood were racers, and I became the official timekeeper when Paul Stoddard passed away.
Oh, okay.
So I kind of keep the records, and then I wrote a book about the thing. And I've been just adjacent to it. I've never raced. I've driven hydros, but I've never done the race myself.
So, Brian, the morning festivities were not always like you described them. I mean, at one point, they were sort of all-night bacchanals, right?
Yeah. Well, okay, if we have to get into that, we will. So, no, it all started Roger and Warren, and then Roger Compton would leave from Roger's property or Warren's raft, which were right next to each other. And it was just them. And the only people really interested were us neighborhood kids. And so around 1972, I think it was, they moved, a couple guys wanted to do it with them, so they moved the start-finish to Jensen Point. And then the next year is when the Coast Guard showed up and tried to stop it, or it did stop it. So along Quartermaster Drive back in the day in the early 70s, there was probably 15 to 20 teenagers between Dread Creek Bridge and Monument Road. And we liked to, Warren Bibbins would take all the neighborhood kids water skiing. And that was a hangout. You know, you'd hang out at Warren's Raft and water ski, and there was a couple hydros down there, and you'd run around the hydros and blah, blah, blah. And So that was our summer. And when we were in McMurray in probably 1971, we decided, well, let's sleep out on Warren's Beach and be right there when they take off. Well, we had a fire, we had fireworks, and one of the neighbors had some homemade wine made. And things got pretty crazy, and we were up all night, and of course these kids got drunk on this crappy wine and puked all over. And then we went down, you know, and so then after that, people started to get, oh yeah, we had another party the next year, and it soon, by the 2000s, it turned into this huge bacchanal of teens and kids. And we lived right on the harbor, and you'd hear them all night long, and it drove me nuts. One year they had a siren, and they'd run this siren all night long. And one year I went down to Jensen Point at 4 a.m, and there's 3 beach boats half sunk from kids that on their parents' boats and whatever. It got so bad that the Beachcomber wrote editorial about it. I believe it was 2011. Like, this part of the tradition is going to sink the tradition.
Yeah.
Well, lo and behold, soon after that, the whole thing just fizzled out, and it really doesn't happen anymore.
Oh.
I don't know if it was because of the Beachcomber or because parents or what, or the younger kids don't have that connection. Yeah. But anyway, that kind of part is, but that went on for 20 years, that all-night crazy party. And we kind of started it, but boy, it got way out of hand to what I would ever do.
Pre-iPhone.
That is exactly what I was going to say, Craig.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I was going to say electronics killed the bacchanal.
Probably true. Probably true.
I mean, that in advancing age.
Right? Yeah. Maybe, yeah. But I remember the keggers, you know, when I was in college, you would have keggers where you'd have a big bonfire and you'd be out all night, you know. But, oh, boy.
So the good thing, though, is this tradition has every year kind of gained some new younger people. Roger was, and those guys were worried, the original guys, that it would die out. In the mid-80s, there might have only been one or two hydros that went. Now, I believe this year there's going to be 7.
Wow.
So there's a lot of these young guys, 30-year-olds, kind of are really into it and have carried it on, which is awesome.
That is great.
Fantastic. So, Elsa, tell us a little bit about what the museum has planned around the hydro exhibit this summer.
Sure, yeah. So you'll start to see posters up around town announcing the exhibit. The community will have lots of opportunities to see the exhibit. We have a soft opening on June 30th to make sure that everybody who wants to learn more about the hydros before the event on the 4th of July can come into the museum and view the exhibit. The exhibit will be open on first Friday then after the 4th of July and run through the end of the year. As part of the exhibit, we're planning on having several hydros on view at the museum at the ice cream social on the first Friday of Strawberry Festival on July 14th. Plus the hydros will be in the parade, and we'll have at least one on view at the Heritage Museum's booth during the festival. So again, lots of opportunities to see the hydros during the festival and throughout the rest of the year, because the exhibit will be up through December. And we're open, the museum's open, of course, Wednesday through Sunday from 1 to 4.
Did you hear that, Truman, that the hydros are going to be in the parade? That means that there might be something in the parade today that you and I know about, because we're emceeing again the parade.
Yeah.
And normally we get the cheat sheet after the parade has actually begun.
Yeah, or maybe 3 minutes before it starts. And, of course, it's never in order. So we spend most of our time shuffling papers, you know, trying to figure out what's
and making
next.
Stuff up.
Yeah, making stuff up, yeah. Well, at least we can make up some cool stuff now.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
We, you know, I'm taking notes about the history, actually, so.
So, hey, Brian, tell us a little bit about the hydro course. It starts at Jensen Point. Which way do they go around the island?
They go... They go counterclockwise, and when the Coast Guard shut them down and then demanded that, for a while, they demanded that they have a permit, and all this stuff, and they had the festival, Strawberry Festival, the JCs sponsored it. But now, since no sponsors and stuff, anyway, the Coast Guard made them go the other direction, made them go clockwise. Hmm. And they didn't like that because they don't like running up the West Pass against the current.
Yep.
And plus, the hydros are built to only turn right, left.
Left.
Turn left.
Yeah.
So anyway, they go all the way around the island. Normally, on a flat, calm 4th of July morning, it might take like 43 minutes. The fastest time is, I think, 35 minutes.
Wow.
The longest time is, I believe, 59 minutes. Hmm. Depending on the weather, it might take a lot longer. I don't know what the forecast is for this year, but last year it was pretty
well, bumpy. I would guess the wind and the waves would make a huge difference. Yeah.
Once in a while, they'll just not go because it's,
oh, really?
I think, several years ago. There's been like 4 or 5 years where they just decided it's just too rough to do it.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Well, that's a shame. I mean, you'd think those guys would be out there come hell or high water, you know, so to speak.
Well,
that's when you need somebody with an unlimited.
Yeah,
there you go. Yeah.
So, Brian, are there any fascinating tidbits about the race? Anybody flipped their boat, sunk their boat? You know,
there have been. Several years ago, Paul Hoffman flipped his boat off the North End ferry dock, and the ferry crew was quite concerned. They dropped one of their rescue boats and went out to check him out. He was fine. He was just floating there with his boat. They also called the Marine unit from Des Moines, who came and wrote him a ticket for improper registration, license plate, no boater's card, and stuff like that. This guy, Bo, last year, he hit a wave, and he flew out his hydro. He had a GoPro going. And you see the hydro going through those waves, and then you just see the engine. He was able to climb back in and get it started and go.
Oh, my
God. Keep going. Another guy years ago fell out of his boat, hit a tugboat wave, and he was able to climb back in and finish the race. So there's been a lot. I mean, every year somebody breaks down and doesn't make it all the way around. Sometimes only one will make it around. So there's a lot of stories of, you know, boats breaking down and not making it all the way.
So is there a safety boat or a chase boat or anything?
Yeah, there's a couple of chase boats that follow them around. And usually a plane or two follows them around.
Oh, yeah, really? Rob Mosley one year was flying over. The whole race a couple times.
Yeah. Rob Andrews used to follow him around in his plane,
all right,
too.
So here you go, Craig. This is we've got to get VOV involved in this. We could do a play by play from the air.
Yeah, you could.
We could, but you know, again, we might want to keep this a little lower profile.
Yeah, well, I don't know.
I'm in favor of it, but
that might be whatever. It might be kind
not
of
too
fun.
Many people are going to be up awake at that time.
There is that.
That's true. Oh, well, we can archive
it. Yeah. That's right. You can go back and listen to it later.
Yeah,
we got to think about that.
4th of July Hydros live on the air from Voice of Vashon.
One of us has to be awake enough to get the plane off.
Well,
the ground.
There is that. Well, I don't know. Between the two of us, we might be able to get it
going.
Half
a brain, yeah.
Yeah.
So Elsa, tell us a little bit about what else the museum has planned this summer.
Oh, great.
Festivals and Virginia Five, all that sort of stuff.
Okay, we'll talk about a little something other than the hydros, because they will be up all summer at the museum. But in addition to the hydros, we have, of course, the Natural Wonder exhibit. So come on out and see this wonderful exhibit about the natural environment of Vashon. It's been a very popular exhibit. Tickets will go on sale for the Virginia Five circumnavigation of Vashon Mori Island. That's going to happen on August 19th. We've gotten a lot of calls. People are really interested in that. And if you want to enjoy a beautiful afternoon going around the island and learning about the history, having a little snack to eat and a little something to drink, it is a really fun afternoon. So please join us on the 19th of August. We also have the Vashon 101 talk series, which continues with the demographics of Vashon Island presented by Alice Larson on Thursday, July 13th on Zoom. And we'll wrap up the series with a presentation by Patrick Christie in August. This, again, another really popular series all on Zoom, second Thursday of every month. And we've been covering Vashon geology, ecology, a look at the history and culture of the Schwabops or the Swiftwater people, and our relationships with the Puyallup tribe. It's on the history and growth and change and how we've developed into the island community that we are today. We're also doing a lot behind the scenes with the permanent exhibit. You know, we have a renovation of our permanent exhibit going on. That's a very big initiative for the museum. We have as I think I've told everyone, an NEH grant, National Endowment for the Humanities grant, that's helping us to pay for this wonderful new exhibit for the island community. And we're in the stages of finalizing drawings and finalizing the labels and going out to contractors for bids on this. We're always looking for Vashon stories and Vashon history to include in this major exhibit for the museum. And you may see us out during festivals and on First Fridays. We hope that we'll be out interviewing folks to get their stories. We want to hear about your Vashon summer stories. We'd like to have those interviews to possibly use in the exhibit. Again, there's a lot behind the scenes working on with the community on different trails. The Burton Trail is new for us this year, and the Burton History Trail. So then we go into fall, and there's a lot going on there too.
Thanks, Elsa.
I have one comment about the Heritage Museum. A few years ago, you had a wonderful exhibit with photographs. I'm trying to remember Chris's last name, but it was from the Vietnam era. He had a really wonderful exhibit.
And Chris Gaynor.
Pardon me. That's it. Yeah.
Chris Gaynor.
Right. Yeah.
Yep.
And what fascinated me was walking around looking at all. I'm a Vietnam veteran myself, and meeting the number of people that were there that were Vietnam veterans. I had no idea. Now, there are a lot of folks that live on the island that are vets. And I was really surprised to see some of them. I was like, what? You know, I can't believe you were there, you know, and sharing stories. And that exhibit, I think, really brought that out from a number of people. Anyway, I really appreciate the work you guys do and that bringing home those kinds of stories about Vashon. So.
Thank you, Truman, because that's exactly what every exhibit does, that, you know, you were surprised to learn your neighbors that were Vietnam vets and LGBTQ and the Japanese experience. I mean, every exhibit brings people out and to learn about the community. It's really exciting, and we love to hear, love to have those comments and that feedback.
Yeah, cool.
Thanks. So, Brian, if folks want to get involved with the 4th of July hydros this year, what do they do? They just show up at Jensen Point?
Just show up at Jensen's Point. Like, there's no... there's no formality to any of this. There's no committee. There's no club. There's no nothing. It's just, as far as racers and getting involved that way, people just get a hydro and show up and do it. And as far as participating as a fan or watching it, Jensen Point, 5 a.m., be there and you can see it. A lot of people, you'd be amazed, a lot of people will then get in their car and follow the hydros around. They'll A lot of them will race to Portage and watch them go by Portage. We'll wave the heck off the shore there because they have to get way around
Point Robinson.
Robinson. And then they'll race to Redding's Beach and see them go by there. And then they'll race back to Jensen's Point to catch them there. But then there's a lot of people who live on the shoreline will be out there in their lawn chairs. And a lot of times when a hydro breaks down, they'll row into shore and a family will take them in and feed them breakfast while they wait for a rescue. That story's happened many times.
So what time does the race actually start?
Actually starts usually about 5:15, 5:30. As soon as it's light enough and the guys all are there. So it's usually about between 5:15 and 5:30.
So what kind of officiating is there that, I mean, to start the race and determine who wins?
What happens is they all start independently and they go out and go around. And then once they're all started, or all that are going to get started, they kind of get together and then they race by the Dresden Point. And as soon as they get by the point, we hit a stopwatch at the first boat.
Oh.
So we don't time every boat. The time goes off the first one by. So we don't get an accurate time that everybody did. Yeah. And then the first one back, you click the thing and it's over. Simple as that.
Old school. I like it.
Yeah.
The original timer, Paul Stoddard, always brought his Mickey Mouse watch with him. He had a big Mickey Mouse alarm clock. He never used that to actually time him, but that's the kind of guy he was. And he had a little timer. And I just used my phone.
Yeah.
A lot of times, several times, I've accidentally turned it off. And I always have my son Owen and my daughter Olivia's backups. So like, hey, what's your phone say? Quick.
So you are the official.
I am the unofficial official timer.
Oh, okay, all right.
And do you still have the Mickey Mouse clock?
Paul's daughter has it.
No, oh, that's great.
Great. So maybe tell people about the book that you wrote, Brian. How did they get a copy of that?
Yeah,
they want more about this.
So I wrote this book just because, you know, I think it's such a big part of Vashon history and big part of heritage for a lot of Islanders, you know, of this race. And I self-published it, and I have a bunch of copies ready to sell. Come to Jensen Point at 5:30 in the morning. I'll have some there. We'll have some at the museum. And they're also available at the Vashon Bookshop.
And what is the title?
The title is 4th of July Hydros Circling Vashon Since 1955.
Excellent.
And it's got a lot of stories. It's got a lot of background about hydro racing and how unlimited hydro and how it got all these young guys into it back in the 50s and how that led to this race. And then it has all the records. And the Beachcomber has done a report on the hydros since 1973. And the book includes at least a synopsis of all the Beachcomber every year, Beachcomber report. Has a list of all the participants, over 130 photographs, all the records of who won and the times it took them to get around the island.
That's cool. For Truman and me, that's great that it's got all those pictures.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Can I see? That is excellent.
Here, let me hold it up so everybody can see it.
Yeah, there you go.
Right, yeah, right. Wrong medium there. But.
Yeah.
All right. Well, hey, let me thank Brian and Elsa for coming on to the Brown briefly. You're welcome to stay on if you want while we chat a bit here. But Brian, how can they order your book?
They can order my book by going to my blog. So,
I guess I could just 101 here, right?
it's myvashonislandblog.com.
Oh my gosh!
So it's kind of long and hard, Go to the bookstore. Come to the 4th of July. I'll be selling them at my booth at the Strawberry Festival. We'll have a booth in the Village Green.
There you go.
And they'll also be at the Heritage Museum.
Yeah. We'll have them at the Heritage Museum, too.
And how much are they?
$20.
$20? Can't beat that. Getting that kind of history.
All right. Well, great. Well, thank you, Brian.
You bet. Thank you. Also,
we appreciate it much. Yeah. Truman, Craig, any questions for these guys?
No. It looks like I was thumbing through the book. It answers a lot of questions. It's a great book
thank you.
That you did there.
Thanks to all the people who let me use their photographs. There's tried to get photographs of everybody that has been involved in every year. And
yeah. I found it interesting that the fastest overall time was, 2001, I think.
Fastest overall time was, 2001, but that was not done by an outboard hydro.
Right.
That was done by an inboard hydro, so that really doesn't count.
Okay.
Oh. The fastest time for a outboard hydro was in 2019, Tony Bianchi.
Gotcha.
33 minutes and 25 seconds.
Okay. Wow. Who was it again?
Tony Bianchi.
Oh, Tony? Mm-hmm. Oh, no kidding. I'll
yeah,
be there.
He flew.
Yeah,
before that, the record had been 35 minutes and 15 seconds by Roger Stanley in 1977.
Way back in 77.
The longest, just glancing at the list here, we have a 56-minute Kitzsillig. I think there's an even longer one. 56 minutes. Yeah. Yeah, 56 minutes is the longest.
Well, that's a long time to be on your knees. Wow.
No kidding. Hmm?
All right. Well, thank you, guys. So, also, again, this exhibit opens when?
On June 30th, there'll be the soft opening. So, again, so you can come and see and learn all about it before you get up at 4:30 in the morning on the 4th of July to go watch this down at Jensen Point. So, on the 30th. And we hope to have some of the past drivers, right, Brian?
Yeah,
people like that will be there if they dare to talk about the boats on the 30th. They'll be visiting and viewing the exhibit, so that should be a lot of fun. So, and you can also go to our website, VashonHeritage.org, to learn about all our programs and events. We try to keep it things updated, and of course our Facebook page too. So thank you guys for letting me join you. It's been a kick and really your very interesting conversation. I'd love to come on, come back anytime when I get to talk a lot. That'd be great.
We will definitely do that.
Absolutely.
Sure. Good. Well, thank you, Brian. Thank you, Ellis.
Thank you, Elsa.
Elsa.
You guys are welcome to stay and chat with us for the last 4 or 5 minutes here. So let's move on and talk about the high school graduation. Voice of Vashon narrated the parade. Did they film the parade, actually?
They did.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, I am really proud of the Voice of Vashon. I mean, the whole parade idea was hatched here at the Voice of Vashon. And obviously it occurred because of COVID. But it was such a success that is now going to be an annual tradition. And this year it was bigger and better than ever. We had Mary Maron and
Jim Marsh. Yeah.
Narrated. And they did a great job. I called Kate though, and I said, you know, there's only one issue with that. And first of all, Mary laughed so much that it was quite infectious, but they would ask a question and you couldn't hear the answer. So I said, Mary, you've got to repeat the answer because we don't know what they said, but overall just a fabulous job, really a great new tradition that, is established here on Vashon.
And Voice of Vashon also does that for the festival parade, right?
Allegedly.
Who's going to do that this year?
That would be the two Hanyaks that put the plane in the trees.
Yeah. And well, and the bad part is that they have pictures of us in our shorts, and it's blinding. You know, the white fish belly white right. that comes from those legs are a bit much, but we'll tough it out again.
Or the fans will tough it out.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Right. So tune in to Voice of Vashon on Festival Parade to hear the commentary.
There you go.
All right. So Vashon Ferries, what's going on? What do we have to look forward to this summer, guys? Any insights on what's happening with the ferry system?
More of the same.
That was an easy answer.
Yeah, it was good.
That's discouraging.
I have to admit, I don't know. It's just that because nobody knows. You know, it's the best laid plans of mice and men. We'll see what happens in terms of whether we got one ferry, two ferries, or maybe even three on occasion.
There was an article in the Times this morning about it, and the ferry system basically said no three boat this year. And they might bring in a third boat when it's needed if things are running behind.
Oh, yeah.
Isn't that a good joke?
Yeah. Oh, boy. Well, it's what it is to be an islander, I guess, you know.
Thank God I live and work on the island.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
Have any of you guys done the passenger-only ferry recently? How is that doing? Is that...
Seems to be fine. The taxi is really a bit of a marvel of the passenger numbers. I think, you know, they went down during COVID because so many people went home to work. But it's a great success, and I appreciate that Dow was a big supporter of picking up the loss of the Washington State Ferry passenger boat and instituted the King County passenger water taxi.
Great idea.
Sure. So we have elections coming up on Vashon. School board, park board, health district board, fire levy in early August.
And don't forget the airport commissioner.
Airport commissioner.
Yeah, the three of us.
That's a
hot contested boy.
That's right.
Join us.
Contested. Yeah. So, you guys want to mention about what's going to happen in July with the fire district levy in terms of the Brown briefly?
Sure.
Yeah, well, we've got a couple of individuals coming in to discuss the pros and cons on two different shows. An individual, Scott Harvey, who is against it. And then we have Bruce, you're going to be talking to...
Jim Bristow, Dr. Jim Bristow.
Who's in favor of it. So if you want to hear two very different views of the fire levy vote, listen in on those shows.
Yeah. Yeah, that should be... we were going to have him here at the same time, but we decided that we couldn't find the boxing gloves that would fit. And just kidding.
Never a good idea.
No.
I thought you were going to talk about the Bidens.
We'll give that a bit of time to settle.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, we're down to our last minute or so, right, Truman?
Yep, yeah. One to go.
Okay. Anything to add to this? Brian, again, let me thank you for coming in, and let me recommend that people show up at about 5 a.m., 4:35, 4:45 or so in the morning, and watch the hydros take off. It's an exciting thing to watch. And Brian's book, as Craig pointed out, not only does it have a lot of pictures for us who are sort of a word challenge, but it's also a great read as well. And Elsa, thank you for coming in. Thank you for sharing what the museum is doing this summer. Very exciting stuff happening at the museum. So thank you both. Yes,
my pleasure.
Thanks. And so the next edition of the Brown Briefly, we're going to try our new monthly Truman Show format. We've decided that once a month we're going to not have a small talk section, and Truman's going to sort of lead us through our ramblings of through the minds of the Briefleys. So we'll experience that next week. And then we'll have a sense of whether we'll do that again in the future or not.
Yeah, that's for sure.
That the Truman Show is the mind unhinged show.
That's right.
I resemble that remark.
Unhinged on all of our
parts. Oh, okay.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So for Kevin, for Elsa, for Truman, Brian, Craig, I'm Bruce Hallman. We'll see you next week on the Brown Briefly. Thank you.
Thanks for joining us.